خطفوك من حمل البحار؟ وأين قد وجدوا الوعاء؟ حبسوك من يقوى على حبس الشموس عن الضياء؟ كيف احتووا شم الجبال؟ وأين ضموا الكبرياء؟ ودعوك كيف نسيت قبلك من دعوا في كربلاء؟ أخفوك لو فتحوا دفاترنا القديمة باعتناء لرأوا بأن أسمى صفات الله أروعها الخفاء. من سبق سيعود للأيتام للثوار، سيعود يا أرض الجنوب فلا تخافي الأوصياء.
To many, he's a legend. But to these people whose lives were directly affected by the Imam, he's alive and kicking as they achieve his goals through the legacy he left behind, a legacy that continues to live on and grow for over 30 years into the Iranian-born Shiite cleric's disappearance. Who is this Imam?
I can tell you briefly that he's human, a perfect human, in all aspects of humanity.
Sayyid Musa Sadr, who was born and raised in the Iranian city of Qom, was passionate about helping everyone around him, especially those in need.
In the villages back then, he was still a teenager. The village kids had painful eyes that needed cleaning. He used to bring these kids, clean their eyes, put eye drops for them, and treat them. He would wake up in the morning and find a long line of kids waiting for him to have their eyes treated. He is a unique son for his parents, a unique brother for his siblings, a special husband for his wife, an exceptional father for his kids.
The unique son and grandson of a family of Ayatollahs inherited the skill of merging religion and politics. He saw it as a foregone conclusion to lead a revolution.
My father, Sayyid Sadruddin Sadr, was a great, diligent man and an open-minded cleric. He was the only one who used to deal with politics and religion. So Sayyid Musa grew up in such a household. It would only be natural for him to turn out in a way where he knows how to deal with politics and life.
In Lebanon, the Imam's ancestral homeland, Shiites were poor, oppressed, neglected, and underrepresented in the government. When the most prominent Shiite political leader, Sheikh Abdul Hussein Sharafuddin, passed away, Sayyid Musa was the perfect candidate to be called to the rescue.
Imam Abdul Hussein Sharafuddin got really old. He suggested that his relative Sayyid Musa Sadr succeeds him in Lebanon as a cleric who could fulfill his position with the consultation of religious leaders in Iran. So Sayyid Musa came to Lebanon as a religious leader, lived in Tyre, and started working.
Shiites were living in South Lebanon. The South was under Israeli fire. Since there was no security, no stability, there were no buildings in the South. For example, people suffered from the lack of electricity, water, schooling, and hospitals. There were very few doctors, few schools. Life was uncomfortable.
He accepted the offer and took over the lead of a journey of reforms that would later reshape the political course of action in the whole country.
كثيرون فنحن بحاجة إلى تأسيس ميتم ومن له عنده نقص في الجسد يجب أن نؤمن له مؤسسة للعجزة ومن عنده قلة خبرة يجب أن يتعرف ويتعلم المهن في المدارس المهنية بطبيعة الحال تعليم الأولاد وإعطاء الخبرة الفنية للطالب وللعامل وإعطاء الخبرة الفنية للفتاة إنعاش حقيقي لحياة الجنوبيين أو في الحقيقة إعادة الاعتبار للإنسان الجنوبي أو إمكانية الانطلاق في حياة الجنوب.
The compassionate Imam referred to the helpless needy as deprived. This term shook up the leader's thoughts and started his whole humanitarian expedition.
Shiites were of the deprived majority. Of course, politically, Sayyid Musa managed to ensure their needs, highlighting negligence again and again.
He called Beirut a belt of misery. The deprived were miserable. Sayyid Musa lived the life of the deprived and poor.
Such reforms angered leftist groups and political bosses, whose aim was to preserve the continuation of their powers. But Sayyid Musa had his convincing methods of getting the people of South Lebanon to cooperate and take part in his changes.
As you know how much Kamal Assad opposed the idea of the Higher Shiite Council and wouldn't allow the Imam to continue on with his mission. When Kamal's mother passed away, Sayyid Musa told us, come on, let's go pay Kamal Assad our condolences. We said, what do you mean? Kamal is your enemy and rival. He replied, may God forgive you. I have no enemies. This is Kamal's mother's son. His mother was loyal to the Prophet family and a faithful woman. Kamal is a prominent figure in the community, and it is my duty to pay him my condolences.
The leftists didn't support him, but he used to sit with them, speak with them, and convince them. Other political sides were dealt with in the same way. They didn't agree with his approach, but he stayed in contact, conversed, and had discussions with them.
With his intellectual spark and charisma, and with his comprehensive and extensive culture, he was able to enter the hearts of the people because he was honest. This man would sit among the poor and wouldn't get recognized. He would sit with scientists and impress them. He would sit with politicians and impact them. His unique and inimitable personality entered people's hearts.
The Imam's goal was to achieve national unity and coexistence among different religions in Lebanon. He reached out to the Christians to implement his plan.
أن المسيحيين هم أقرب الناس إلى المسلمين وأن المشركين واليهود الصهيونيين هم أبعد الناس عنهم.
Christians considered him an inspiring leader, being religious and patriotic.
To ensure the Shiite integration, he established the Islamic Higher Shiite Council. The council was located in an all-Christian area, and it worked to guarantee the rights of Shiites as Lebanese citizens.
He started forming the institutions that would accomplish this program, the program of the Shiite reforms, so he established the Higher Shiite Council.
The Sayyid didn't forget the Muslim woman in his plans of reform. Through the Shiite jurisprudence, he recognized her role as fundamental in forming a humanitarian society.
In Sayyid Musa's vision, the woman played a major role and got special attention. That is the real role of women in Islam. Islam gave the woman a sophisticated role in participating in social and political life and the national wars.
Through this council, the Imam introduced new ways of thinking, modernizing the way people applied Islamic laws.
People used to go to the leader for advice. The leader won't go to the people. Sayyid Musa was the first one who went to the people.
That a Muslim man was leaning against the cross, giving acceptable speeches about God to the Christians. More like welcomed by the Christians, he knew that he could get acceptable Islamic talk into the ear of Christian, meaning what Muslims and Christians have in common.
The first Islamic cleric in the Islamic world after the migration of Prophet, peace be upon him, that the Muslim cleric would enter a church and that was forbidden. But Sayyid Musa did it.
Here in this church, the Imam who founded the Higher Shiite Council lectured, prayed, and formed relationships with associates. He faced a great controversy among the Shiite community who did not accept his presence in a non-Muslim institution, considering him godless. Many leaders like Sayyid Muhammad Hussein Fadlallah did not agree with Imam Sadr's approach on unity. It took these leaders years to comprehend the Sayyid's progressive vision on coexistence.
For example, entering and lecturing in church, and even when he ate the ice cream at the Christian man's place in Taif, maybe it was a bold fatwa in Islamic schools of thought. Back then, it was an unprecedented step.
I remember one of the leaders used to say, I used to oppose Sayyid Musa and would say harsh words to him. But every time I called him harsh names, he would visit me. At the end of it, I was embarrassed by him and followed him.
Having good relations with fellow citizens was half the battle for the Iranian cleric. Sayyid Musa knew that for the Lebanese to rely on themselves and become strong, they had to recognize the vulnerability of Zionism, then fight and defeat Israeli oppression, especially in South Lebanon.
The first one who introduced the idea that Israel should disappear off the face of earth. He was firm that we will never approve of Israel as a state. That Israel is evil and dealing with it is forbidden. Meaning, if there is an apple that was produced by Israel, eating that apple is forbidden.
With the assistance of Mustafa Shimran, a physicist and chemist who gave up the luxurious life he lived in the U.S. and came to Lebanon to form military bases against the Israeli offensive, the Imam formed a military wing, Amal Movement.
The martyr Mustafa Shimran was Sayyid Musa's right hand.
Shimran trained Amal secretly, but the Imam was forced to announce the movement's formation when a bomb accidentally exploded, killing 35 soldiers of the new resistance.
وأسسوا مهرجانات فرحا فلم أدخل في بيت إلا وسمعت والد الشهيد أو والدة الشهيد تقول كان لنا واحد وبقي لنا خمسة.
In its charter, the Palestinian cause was a central issue for Amal. For this cause preserved the rights of both, the Palestinians and the Lebanese against a common enemy. However, Sayyid Musa opposed the refugees' interference in Lebanese internal affairs and their defiance of Israel on Lebanese land.
Sayyid Musa Sadr had some points of criticism, but he was never against the Palestinian resistance. He was keen to support their resistance and used to call the Lebanese to partner up with the Palestinian resistance. However, he used to criticize the actions of the Palestinian resistance and the mistakes some resistance members used to make. Some people didn't understand it in the right manner.
He used to say to them that the way to liberation should be a point of collection, even within Palestinian factions. How could we speak of liberation when we are fighting amongst ourselves?
The patriotic man of peace who struggled on behalf of the Shiites firmly fought against hostility amongst fellow Lebanese. He considered the civil war in Lebanon to be the product of an external conspiracy that would doom the country and serve Israel.
I called the Imam while he was protesting in Amliye and told him that the Bika is about to witness a massacre that will go down in history as a disgrace. So he said, in half an hour I will issue a televised speech and tomorrow morning I will be in Bika.
إنما تطلق على بيتي وعلى قلبي وعلى أولادي وأن كل فرد يساعد على تخفيف التوتر أو إطفاء النيران إنما يساهم في إبعاد النار عني وعن بيتي وعن محرابي ومنبري.
At this mosque in 1975, the Imam, who was ahead of his time, protested the internal use of arms and warned against the strife Lebanon's lived in. 36 years later, his call is yet to be heard, leaving the country in an unprecedented political and social split. In his campaign against this war, Imam Sadr headed a round of visits to Arab leaders of Syria, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and Algeria. He accepted Libyan President Muammar Gaddafi's invitation to an unknown fate and flew to Libya. Sheikh Mohammed Yaqub and journalist Abbas Badruddin accompanied him on August 25th of 1978. The last thing his family heard from him was a letter he sent to his sons on August 30th of 1978. It stated that he was heading for Paris. However, Gaddafi claimed that the Imam departed for Italy. That claim made Gaddafi the primary suspect of the Imam's abduction. Years later, the Libyan leader publicized his claim himself.
Well, after we brought the case back in 2000, there was a moment when, under the pressure of the case, Gaddafi made a statement to Libyan television where he acknowledged that the Imam had disappeared in Libya against everything that he had been saying for the past 25, 26 years.
Although every Lebanese ministerial statement contains a clause to follow up on the judicial procedures pertaining to the disappearance of Imam Sadr, his perseverant family is the only faction working to reveal the truth.
We are not terrorists. We are against violence. We never think about those methods. We just want our rights. We will never forget those rights until we die. We will always be after Gaddafi, and we will always curse him, asking God to doom him and save mankind from his evilness until God saves Imam Sadr.
We are conducting a very serious investigation now that we have access to prisons, that we have access to the former regime members. Hopefully Gaddafi and his family and those in the government who have information about what happened to the Imam and his two companions will be interrogated.
Their search for the missing imam continues, for he's believed to be alive in one of Libya's prisons today. The family hopes that the current situation in Libya will ease up the investigation process and liberate the abducted imam. Described as a man of charm, smiles, and more inclined to instruct by humor than by harsh recriminations, the man referred to as the vanished imam anticipated the future as he continued to attract the youth of all religions and shape the lives of many who were born years after his kidnapping.
He had the humanitarian side, the religious side, the side of resistance, the side that rejects injustice, and the side that sought peace during the Lebanese crisis.
The Sayyid's followers walked his footsteps, tackling all the issues he left behind. His sister, who represents the Muslim woman through the imam's eyes, heads the Sajj Foundation. This institution provides martyrs' wives with jobs, their kids with an education, and the wounded with monetary support to survive. Nowadays, the once-deprived Shiites are also guaranteed seats in the Lebanese parliament and cabinet, as well as other government positions.
Shiites have political representation, whether in the parliament, the cabinet, or in government positions.
Taken up with memories of the old days, Sayyid Musa's close friend, Father George Khidr, sheds a tear of joy as he smiles for all the success the Shiites have accomplished.
The Shia in the south have the most advanced technology institution in all of Lebanon. This makes me crazy happy to see the ones deprived ahead.
Starting with Amal leader Nabih Birri, Sayyid Musa's successors adopted his approach to preserve his mission. Amal was the only movement to resist Israel's strike on the Palestinian resistance in 1982. That marked a turning point for the Lebanese resistance, as it served as the first step in defeating the enemy.
The Battle of Khalde was the first real confrontation, where there were people fighting face to face. It was the first spoils war operation in the history of Arab-Israeli conflict. This battle happened. Some get killed, others get wounded, and Emir Kaffa was captured.
Although Amal had partly succeeded in its mission against the Zionist regime, many of its leaders found a different route to implement Sayyid Musa's plans. Hezbollah was the new movement.
Imam Sadr left clear fingerprints in Hezbollah's performance and choices, especially that Hezbollah is devoted to the approach of resistance that is linked to Imam Khomeini's approach.
We love diversity. We love the variety. Everyone plays his role. But this doesn't mean that these two teams don't complete each other. Amal and Hezbollah complete each other. Hezbollah emerged from the womb of Amal. Almost all of the leaders of Hezbollah today were part of Amal before.
Together, they grew as a strong and united Lebanese resistance, fulfilling their duty of liberating Lebanon from all occupying Israeli forces in the year 2000. They crushed the undefeated Israeli army, achieving, as they put it, the divine victory of
2006. والعشرين من أيلول تدهشون العالم من جديد وتثبتون بحق أنكم شعب عظيم وأنكم شعب أبي وأنكم شعب وفي وأنكم شعب شجاع.
تفتش البحار عن زرقة عينيك فأجد النعاس ينطفئ في عيون العرب. تفتش كيعان الصدور وكلما فتشت تتسع الفراغات الكبيرة.
What separates us from Imam Musa Sadr is this large sea full of mysteries. He was vanished, but doesn't seem to be missing for his family and the people who still await his return.